Remember, before buying or selling any of the funds discussed on our show today, do your homework or work with a trained advisor to make sure the investment meets your individual circumstances and financial objectives. Also, keep in mind that the performance numbers we discuss today would not necessarily be the performance achieved by a Financial Engines client, and the mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, like other investments, have a risk of loss. You can visit www.financialengines.com for more information.
Welcome to Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines. Ranked America's largest independent registered investment advisor by Investment News. Every week, we help you make sense of your investments, retirement, Social Security, and much, much more. Plus, we answer your calls and emails. And now, hosts Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
Yesterday, the first step towards a milestone moment for investors happened. And more on that milestone in just a moment. Welcome to the show. I'm Bob Richards. He's Andy Smith. We are here to help you reach your retirement and your investing goals. And that includes personal help when you call us at 888-833-8637 or drop us an email to askandy@investingsense.com. So, Andy, to start the show,
yes,
looking where we are at this point in the year, the bull market in stocks continues.
Continues.
There's bull markets, it seems like, everywhere beyond stocks. Real estate is on fire, particularly in Canada. But one of the most interesting bull markets that I've seen recently is in cryptocurrency. And the most popular one of the cryptocurrencies is Bitcoin.
Bitcoin, yes. Yeah. So it is the most popular of these cryptocurrencies, digital currencies, alternative currencies. There's like hundreds of these things. Ethereum is one that you hear a lot about. Ripple, Litecoin. L-I-T-E coin for the diet conscious, I guess. Dash. There's another one that I can read, but I really don't know how to pronounce. So it's like the Bitcoin's just a currency like the dollar or the euro or the pound or the yen. They're all organized through these networks called blockchains. So they're made up of blocks. It's a digital ledger that keeps a secure record of transactions. The nice thing is, or the thing that everybody likes about them, is that they are decentralized. So no one entity controls the blocks. So sure, you can use these currencies to buy groceries or clothes or whatever else, but there are some differences. And a lot of it goes back to this decentralized blockchain. They are entirely digital. They are not controlled by a government or the central bank. They are extremely volatile. So there's a lot more to these digital currencies here than just, you know, what you think or kids playing on the internet. They're getting pretty big. I mean, like the market cap of Bitcoin was, what, 50 billion with a B a couple of weeks ago. Ethereum was up around 20 billion. We have a chart. We put up a chart on investingsense.com so you can see these run-ups. So investingsense.com, you'll see the digital currencies. But the run-up reminds a lot of us of the dot-com stocks back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I mean, the billion with a B, is massive. And, just to put things into perspective, I saw a story recently that what was believed to be the first Bitcoin transaction was just 7 years ago in 2010, where a developer paid 10,000 Bitcoins for two Papa John's pizzas.
Pizzas, yes.
And if you do the quick calculation, those Bitcoins today would be worth $20 million.
$20 million. As if it was bad enough living in your parents' basement buying pizzas with Bitcoins. Now you've lost, what, like $20 million. So again, this totally reminds me of the dot-com stuff.
You said that earlier. It reminds you of a bubble. So what do you think? Is this a bubble?
I do. I think it is. But it could go on for a while. I'm not trying to call a top. I'm just worried because a lot of investors are asking about Bitcoin. Reminds me of the story about Isaac Newton going broke, chasing the South Seas bubble in the 1700s.
That's a nice history reference.
You like that?
You mean that Isaac Newton?
How about that? Papa John's and Isaac Newton, yes. So the dude who formulated the laws of motion and universal gravitation, even he had a fear of missing out and let greed kind of just screw up his investments.
What a great reference. And so bring it all to a point for us. What does this mean for investors? What, as investors, should we be considering?
You know, I wouldn't invest in it right now. It's not something that we're investing in. It's far more interesting and far more impactful to look at the possibilities with that blockchain technology. So it's not so much the fancy car and what it looks like on the outside. It's the engine on the inside. So the financial system at large is working on adapting this blockchain technology. Large banks, they are moving segments of their financial infrastructure to blockchains. You've got the DTCC, Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, one of the most significant entities who are looking at blockchain technology. But blockchains could make clearing and settlement of trades faster, more secure. Punchline is, this blockchain could be another benefit for individual investors. It's just another development that makes right now a pretty cool time for what you're doing out there with your accounts, what we're doing for investors. Playing fields are being leveled. You've got the waging of commission wars by Schwab, Fidelity, so prices are dropping. You've got the dropping of fund fees. There's a lot of stuff going on now that's pretty cool to watch.
So as you mentioned, some of the good things that are happening for investors these days, one of those was kind of a milestone moment for investors. That was yesterday. The Department of Labor fiduciary rule took a big step in the right direction. It's now officially partially implemented, with the full implementation coming on January 1st of next year, 2018. And this rule meant to bond financial professionals working with retirement savers to legal and ethical standards.
I think it's something long overdue. We applaud what's happening out of D.C. Our own Chris Jones, chief investment officer at Financial Engines, was pretty involved in the entire process and really championing the rule as it was being created out of D.C. So this is something that could not have happened fast enough.
And we've talked about this rule on the show for quite a long time. In fact, recently we talked with John Bunch, president of Financial Engines Advisors, and here's what John had to say about the DOL rule.
The term fiduciary, I think the easiest way to understand it is, In our industry, you can give advice but not be held liable for the outcome of that advice in a holistic manner, right? Was it right? And the way that the industry's gotten around it is, at the point in time that I've made this advice, was it suitable? So does it meet a level of suitability? But it has nothing to do about the future and the outcome and how I treat you as an investor. With the fiduciary, it's pretty simple, saying I'm liable. I'm legally liable to make sure that you're in an investment that's appropriate. And yeah, you think about that, being sold something that basically the minute you walk out the door, there's no accountability to the legal aspects of it. That's not a good situation for anyone.
That was John Bunch from Financial Engines. So Andy, really between the falling fund fees, you mentioned earlier commissions dropping, the blockchain, that's a part of Bitcoin.
Yep.
And now this, yep, taking a step forward with the Department of Labor, it really feels like this might become the golden age for investors.
I think so. Now, I will say that this battle is still far from over. There's a couple of ways that the fiduciary rule could still die. One is this thing called the Choice Act, which the House passed on Thursday. It could eliminate the fiduciary rule, or the Department of Labor could still rescind the rule as it continues to review the costs and benefits from now all the way up until full implementation on January 1st of 2018. But what happened yesterday is a tremendous, tremendous event.
It was a tremendous event. Coming up next here on Investing Sense, unless you hit the Bitcoin jackpot, retiring in your mid-50s might sound like a pipe dream, but it's not. And in just a few moments, we're going to be talking with someone who did just that. Plus, we are here to help you with your investing and your retirement questions. Our email address, askandy@investingsense.com. You can call us at 888-833-8637 here on Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines.
Andy's a certified financial planner who's worked with investors for over 15 years and featured in the Wall Street Journal, Fox Business, and NBC News. That's some major street cred. If you want to put Andy's expertise to the test, email him at askandy@investingsense.com. Years of providing personalized financial advice, we serve over 140 companies on the Fortune 500. Learn more at investingsense.com. And now, back to Investing Sense with Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
We are going to get right back to work answering your investing and retirement questions. Email those, again, to askandy@investingsense.com or call us at 888-833-8637. That's just what Lee in Snellville, Georgia is doing. Lee, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Nearing retirement, if I've already made the decision because I've got Social Security and some retirement income, and I've got a 401k that I'll be rolling into an IRA, and the 401k money I've got in total stock index and S&P 500 index primarily, what would be the advantage in switching that from a mutual fund index into an ETF index that tracks the S&P 500 and the total stock index?
So, Bob, in this case, I mean, they have similar names, right? But they're a little bit different. Both funds are going to track the same index. You would think that performance should be pretty similar, but you're going to see differences in performance over the long term if there's a difference in the fund fees. So the fee that I want Lee to pay attention to, and really anybody to pay attention to, is the expense ratio. In this case, for Lee, I would go with the fund with a lower expense ratio. Now, beyond that, mutual fund and ETFs, you know, they can track the same thing. In this case, they would both be tracking the S&P 500. But what you have to understand is how you're using a mutual fund or how you're using an ETF. We tend to use both mutual funds and ETFs in our portfolio, but we use them a little bit more strategically. So we like the prospects of using active managers for our bond positions. The bond market's not as liquid or as clear, maybe, as everybody would like to think that it is. So in those situations, you totally need active managers figuring out what you want out of an index and what you want to avoid. Now, with ETFs, they're passive. They're just going to track an index. We'll use them for quick, for cheap, for easy access to a particular benchmark or a particular index, especially as we need an alternative to an active position that we're getting out of as we make changes within an allocation. So I know that up to this point, it was kind of an either or world. Are you an active fan? Or are you a passive fan? It really is both at this point, but you got to know how to use both within the overall allocation. Otherwise, you're going to be chasing something that may or may not make sense for you for your particular situation.
So you have questions? Well, we are here to help. 888-833-8637 or email those to askandy@investingsense.com. So last week, we talked about the benefits of working longer and retiring later with Dr. Jeffrey Sanzenbacher. Well, today, we're going to flip that strategy, and we're going to talk about the benefits of working a shorter career and retiring earlier. And we have one of the folks who is breaking the status quo of retiring at 65 joining us now here on Investing Sense. He is the founder of the website esimoney.com. And he's retired at age 52. He's a writer of the popular blog ESI Money. So, John, where I'd like to start our conversation is that you recently wrote a blog post called 10 Things I Didn't Expect in Early Retirement. And before we get to those 10 things, tell us why you wrote the blog post.
Well, Bob, first of all, let me thank you for letting me be with you today. I appreciate that, and it's great to be here. I wrote the article for a couple reasons. First of all, people are curious about life after retirement. You know, they spend 30 years, 40 years, 50 years doing the same thing during the week. They go to work, and retirement is a bit of a mystery, and it's, you know, not a lot's known about it. So I had some experience, and I could say, I could kind of demystify it a little bit, and I could say this is what retirement is about. So that was probably the first reason. The second was to encourage people, because retirement is pretty positive. People think about it in a positive way. But it's really even better than what people expect. So I wrote the article to say it's great. You know, come on in. The water's awesome.
That's great to hear. So you have 10 reasons that you wrote about. What I'd love to do is zero in on five of those. The one of those that you wrote about, I'll consider it the first one because it's the one that I kind of gravitated towards, and that's, I've gotten very comfortable wearing casual clothes. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so you like that one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I was a business executive for 28 years, so what goes along with that is, you know, a certain level of dress. You have to kind of dress for the role, and that's part of the deal, and I was fine with that. But on the weekends, you know, I prefer just a T-shirt and shorts or, you know, gym pants and, you know, something really casual. Cause I just feel comfortable in that. And, so I basically, now that every day is a weekend, I wear that all the time, and it doesn't matter where I am. Obviously I dress appropriately if I'm going somewhere like a funeral or a wedding or something like that. But, you know, anywhere else, I'm usually, like right now, I'm sitting in T-shirt and shorts here talking to you, and I just feel completely comfortable. It's awesome. I feel like now if I put on jeans that I'm, you know, dressing up.
Yeah, what you can't see is Bob furiously taking notes at this point. So I'm assuming that the studio sessions from now on are going to take on an entirely different candor.
Much more casual.
Because of this casual outfit here.
The second item in your 10 reasons of things that you didn't expect in early retirement is my family relationships are much better. Tell us about that.
They are a lot better. My friend relationships too. It's really because of one reason. It's time. When you work, you're working 40, 50 hours a week. I mean, that was my standard for 28 years. You get home, you're tired already. You still have to exercise and eat and prepare for the next day. I mean, you have a few hours every night, and those aren't your best hours, right? Those aren't the best hours to give to your family. But now I have an abundance of time. So my wife and I walk at least twice a day for 45 minutes to an hour and, you know, chat about what's going on anywhere from the kids to the college plans to where we're going to travel next to, you know, whatever's going on. So, time is a great gift. And when you have that, you can invest more and more in relationships.
We're talking with John. John is the founder of ESIMoney.com. And we're talking with him about a blog post he wrote called 10 Things I Didn't Expect in Early Retirement. And the next one that I'd like to have you fill us in about was that it's an aspect of early retirement you didn't expect. That's the stress is gone. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I didn't really I always thought either a couple things. You know, you read a lot of articles about how bad stress is on your health. But I'm like, you know, I don't think I have a whole lot of stress. And even if I do, I can handle it because that's just who I am. The last few years of my career, I could really feel, I'd go to bed at night and I could feel my jaw was clenched, my temples were tight, my whole face was just like in a tightened ball of stress. And it was because I was thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow? What do I have to do? What do I have to accomplish? Where's our business? Where are we going? And it was started to take a toll on me. And then once I retired, I could really literally feel it going away. I mean, I could feel it draining out of my face, out of my body. The first month was I was just like in detox. I was just like, wow, I can see it was just melting away. And I felt better and better every day. I started sleeping better. And it's been awesome.
It really is encouraging to hear you describe all of these things that you've experienced. And so the stress is gone moves to the next point that I'd love to have you tell us about that you discovered. And that's Mondays become the best day of the week.
So Monday and I didn't get along very well. Well, in retirement, it's exactly the opposite because Monday now signals a week of quiet. You know, the gym is quiet, the stores are quiet, the movie theaters are quiet, restaurants are quiet, because everybody's at work.
We're all working, yeah.
I have 5 days ahead of me on Monday morning that's just going to be relaxing.
We're talking with John, the founder of ESIMoney.com, and John has written a blog post called The 10 Things I Didn't Expect in Early Retirement. And John, as we wrap up our conversation, there's another one that I'd love to have you talk about, because as folks look towards retirement, or even if they've just begun their retirement journey, it's the meaning that work brings to us that we feel like we're going to miss. But the fifth item that you discovered is you're actually learning and growing more than ever.
Yeah, you know, there is a big question about when people retire. They're like, you know, who will I be? What will I do? Will I be bored and all that? But, you know, retirement's changing, and me in particular, I'm not really kind of a rest on your laurels sort of person. I'm kind of like, what am I going to do now? What's my next challenge? How am I going to learn and grow and be better than I am? Be better today than I was yesterday. So I've always loved learning. I've been a lifelong learner, and now I got plenty of time to do it. So I'm growing, you know, more than ever, and I'm enjoying it because I'm doing the things that I really want to learn about and that I have an interest in.
John, thanks so much for your time here on the show. I know we only had enough time to cover five.
John, I thought for sure I was going to have to end the interview because Bob was going to probably leave. Halfway through and just say, you know
He's
what,
done.
Honey? Hey,
He's
honey,
retired.
Guess what? I'm coming home. Retirement starts today. So
Andy, you finish up.
That's
I'm
right.
Gonna do just
that's
that.
Right. But no, really, thanks for taking some time. This is some great stuff, and really have a good rest of your week.
No problem. Appreciate you having me. So you guys have a good week, too.
So we didn't have enough time to get to the full list, but we have it for you when you head to investingsense.com. That's investingsense, S-E-N-S-E.com, and just click on the recent shows button. Coming up next, investing legend and founder of Vanguard Funds, John Bogle, said investors should not own this type of stock. You'll learn what type of stock that is and why is Mr. Bogle making that statement. Plus, we're standing by and ready to help you. Email your investing and retirement questions to askandy at investingsense.com or call us at 888-833-8637. Here on Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines.
Get Andy's take on your financial situation. Email askandy at investingsense.com. You can ask him about anything, your IRA, retirement income, or even your current financial advisor. Financial Engines provides advice for over 9 million retirement accounts. Learn why we've earned this trust at investingsense.com. And now, back to Investing Sense with Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
Andy, let's go international. Earlier this year, you talked about Puerto Rico, and at that time, how they were getting a lot of focus among municipal bond investors. So what I'd like from you first is an update on that situation.
All right. So Puerto Rico was a huge story, right, because the muni bond funds bought all types of Puerto Rican debt. And it was because there's this huge reach for yield in this low-rate world. The latest news is that Puerto Rico is restructuring something like $70 billion in debt. Hit number one, Bob Richards, you don't restructure your debt when you're doing really, really well in the financial markets. Restructuring is just a fancy way of saying, hey, we're going through some financial hardship. We're having difficulty meeting our financial obligations. Hit number two, if you're in dire enough straits and you think you're going to go bankrupt, you can actually negotiate with your creditors to reduce these burdens. Translation, renege on your debt. So this is kind of what's going on now with Puerto Rican debt. The fund companies with the biggest exposure, Franklin, Lord Abbott, Goldman, Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer actually has the most exposure. So this debt situation is now going to the courts. And as you know, the courts are always a great way to resolve any situation. But we're going to be following this a lot more closely.
This kind of reminds me of our conversation that we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. And you were talking about, it sounded like a similar situation in Brazil.
Similar but different. It's a different type of risk in Brazil. But yeah, the market there lost 15% overnight. Markets have stabilized in recent weeks, but the world is still watching, trying to figure out what's going to happen.
So with all of this, what do you think? Do you think it's still worth investing internationally?
Yeah, I mean, it's a controversial subject, obviously. But we continue to find value in diversifying across international markets, both developed and emerging positions.
And the reason why I ask you is because it brings me to something that legendary investor John Bogle said recently.
Yeah, thanks for setting me up. Hey, what do you think? Oh, by the way, this is what Jack Bogle thinks.
Oh, you know where I was going with this. Yeah. He said recently that investors shouldn't own international stocks. This is the same guy who introduced the world to the index fund, and he has saved investors billions of dollars in fees and commissions. And, you know, in fact, Vanguard's riding a really good wave of success.
Yeah. So, you know, yes, Jack Bogle did say avoid international stocks. The reason that he gave is that you have this extra risk, including currency risk, economic risk, and instability risk. So I will give him that. Okay. These are fair points for the situations that we just talked about with Puerto Rico and Brazil. Elsewhere, yeah, Europe's a little bit sluggish. Asia, particularly China, is still kind of rocky. But look, you're not dumping 100% of your money into any position, including international. So there's always going to be some risk attached to any investment.
So back to John Bogle. He argues that the U.S. does better than the rest of the world. And he did, by the way, say that, hey, if you are going to venture into international exposure, you don't want to go over 20%.
Yeah, Lee Greenwood is playing in the background, I'm sure, as he's saying that. Look, that is about where most of our models are for international exposure. For some investors who are particularly risk adverse, maybe Bogle's right. But think about this. If you're investing in the S&P 500 right now, about half of the earnings for those companies come from abroad. So you already have indirect exposure to international stocks. Number two, you know, the problem with Bogle's argument is that it rests on past performance. Past performance does not reflect future results. Right now, valuations are quite a bit higher in the U.S. than in other developed markets. So we see opportunity to reduce overall risk by diversifying into international investments. We see a bigger margin of safety at lower valuations here.
So as you're listening to our conversation and you're thinking, I have international investments, I have a lot of questions, we're here to help. Ask Andy at InvestingSense.com is our email address, 888-833-8637, the phone number to call. And speaking of portfolios, it brings us to one of our favorite parts of the show. It is our portfolio review. This is a chance we offer you for Andy to take a look at your portfolio and offer his thoughts about it. And you can send us all of your portfolio information to AskAndy at InvestingSense.com. And a quick reminder, Andy's only able to give highlights here on the show. So make sure you speak to a financial advisor before taking action on anything that you hear on the air. So this week, Andy, the portfolio review request comes from Bip, and he writes, Andy, here's a breakdown of my savings plan. I have 33% large cap stocks, 29% international stocks, we just had that conversation, 18% mid-cap, 9% bond, 7% short-term, 4% small-cap. You'd had this before the explanation.
Yes.
So Bip would like to know your thoughts of his allocations.
Well, thank you for the question. Thanks for emailing. Now, I don't know your time horizon, your risk tolerance, or your goals, but I got to assume that you're comfortable with some risk here because you've got 84% in stocks, 30% of that is in international stocks. You have about 16% in bonds and cash. Okay. On a risk scale of 1 to 10, you're around a 7 or 8 from where I would see things. You need to figure out if you're comfortable accepting this much risk. I like allocations across a lot of different asset classes. So yes, you have large, mid, and small cap stocks. Yes, you have international stocks, but you got to make sure you know how much risk you're taking on and then what your underlying funds are doing. Chances are you're just looking at the categories that Morningstar or Lipper, they give you. You got to actually look at the fund level portfolio holdings. So I would have you do two things in the next 2 days. Number one, figure out if you're comfortable taking on this much risk. If you're not, reduce the risk. Make sure that you can still reach whatever long-term goals that you have. And number two, find some way to look at the underlying fund level holdings to see if your actual allocation is different from what you think it is. So you're looking at categories, look at the actual holdings. So I like that you're kind of thinking long term when it comes to, you know, the specter of inflation that we're dealing with. But that risk is a huge thing that you got to be comfortable with.
So you mentioned inflation. Where is inflation running right now?
Yeah. So it's around 2.2%. To know what that means, put a negative sign in front of that 2.2%, subtract that from the annual return of stocks, bonds, cash. That's the impact of inflation right now. You have to prepare for this.
That is a great way to calculate that. So what Andy has done is taken a process that normally starts at about 90 minutes to 2 hours and condensed it here as an example on the show. He's gotten back with Bip with even more information. And Andy would love to help you by looking at your portfolio. You can send all of the information to AskAndy at InvestingSense.com and just put portfolio review in the subject line. Now back to helping you with your questions. Nancy from Rock Creek, Ohio is calling us at 888-833-8637. Nancy, what's your question?
It's about the new fiduciary rules that are going to be taking place.
Okay.
Do you think that's going to be a good thing? I feel like what I'm beginning to understand about it is I kind of feel like that the government is taking a little control of what I can do or not do. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but what do you think about those new rules as regard to smaller, older investor?
Yeah, so I think what has happened in the past historically is that the financial services industry, brokers, people who have operated on a commission basis have really taken advantage of smaller investors. I mean, there's just these, you know, wolves out there that have preyed on people for far too long. So this fiduciary rule, the implementation of which started yesterday, basically says if you are going to help somebody with their IRA and with their 401k, any sort of, you know, tax qualified pre-tax type account, You are legally obligated to do what is in their best interests. Now, before yesterday, what they could do is say, hey, I think that this is something that you really need to do. They only really have to worry, or they only really had to worry about proving that it was appropriate for you at the time of sale. Now, past the point of sale, if you changed your mind, if the investment blew up, if you needed money and there were all these penalties, you're basically somebody else's problem, because all they had to do was focus on this point of sale, and then that's it. Well, the fiduciary rule says that at each and every point along the way, if you're going to help somebody with their IRA or 401k, you got to do what's in their best interest. I mean, this fiduciary rule, I think it's great. I know that the opponents to the rule want to paint this as the rule is taking away choices, and you know, it's going to be horrible for smaller investors. Well, there's a U.S. Representative, Ann Wagner. Ann Wagner has been this huge opponent to the fiduciary rule. She was at the signing with Trump, and she said that, oh my gosh, we're returning to the American people control of their own retirement savings. Well, her single largest source of donations is brokerage Edward Jones. Edward Jones has repeatedly said that its business would suffer if the rule became law. It's because they operate on commission. It's because they weren't always acting in a fiduciary role. They weren't always doing what was in your best interest as a client. They were selling 6 or 7 fund families, high commission products. They've put people into annuity contracts, inside IRAs, which are pre-tax type of investments, inside pre-tax IRAs. You don't need to do that. Right. So from my perspective, I think it's a great thing because, you know, for the first time ever, people are going to know, look, if I'm talking to somebody about my 401k or my IRA, I know that they're not trying to take advantage of me. I know that they're not trying to hose me, because they have to do what's in my best interest. Nancy, look, we're up against a break here. I want to finish this. I've got a couple more things. So hang on. We'll finish this here in a bit.
And if you have questions, we're here to help. Ask Andy at InvestingSense.com. That's InvestingSense, SENSE.com. 888-833-8637. The phone number here on InvestingSense, brought to you by Financial Engines.
Want to know how your portfolio stacks up? Get Andy's take on the good, the bad, and everything in between. Just email your portfolio to Ask Andy at InvestingSense.com. Do you have the expertise of 30 PhDs and CFA charter holders backing your financial plan? We do. Go to InvestingSense.com to find one of our financial engine advisors in your area. And now, back to Investing Sense with Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
Before the break, Andy, you were in the middle of answering Nancy's question. Give us a quick recap of where you were up to that point, and then let's get back to Nancy.
All right. So, Nancy, thank you for holding. I know that you're there. We were talking about the whole fiduciary rule, right? People are still hearing about it. Nancy wanted to know if it was even a good thing, right? There's all of this talk about additional government regulation, what the opponents to the rule are saying. So that's kind of where we are right now with Nancy.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm with Edward Jones. And I have not been a person that somebody else make all my decisions for me. Early on, I figured out that I couldn't wait for them to call me and tell me what I should do. So I've been kind of doing my own thing.
Okay.
And I've done fairly decently, okay? But what I wanted to know, if I stay with, I mean, I don't even know in my area, you know, who I would, it's a big thing for me to make a change, to go to somebody else. And if I stay with them, and the worst case scenario that my accounts will only be safer if I stay with them, if I put up with whatever they're talking about here. It looked like that. The last I thought I heard was that I would have to. I could grandfather my IRAs as they are, I guess, as long as I don't make any changes. But anything that I do to buy or sell stocks will have to create another annuity or another IRA. And so if I'm willing to put up with all of that, and I do, like I said, I take pretty much control of my own destiny there, that wouldn't be the worst case scenario to stay with them as long as I'm watching what I'm doing. There's not a big downside to that.
Well, I think you're smart enough to know that the markets aren't going to stand still. The economy's not going to stand still. Politics aren't going to stand still. So where you are right now may not be where you need to be in, gosh, a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of quarters. So now all of a sudden your decision-making process has been shadowed by what you can or can't do within your account so that you don't run afoul of having to open another account and push these accounts here and these accounts here. I mean, investing, retirement, planning is difficult on its own. But then when you start dealing with all of these other kind of nuisances and headaches, this isn't what's supposed to happen in an advisor-client relationship. The advisor all along should have been doing what's appropriate for you and not putting you into a situation however many months or years down the line where, hey, guess what, Nancy? If you don't touch the account ever again, you're going to be fine. But if you ever have to do anything, boy, I'm sorry, because of this horrible rule out of Washington, D.C. that takes power away from small investors, we're going to have to open accounts and I'm going to have to treat you differently for these investments versus these investments. That's not what you want. So I would say this is an opportunity for you to start talking to some other people, because this is not a good situation for you to be in. You know, you want to be able to change. You want to be able to adapt to the market and the economy and politics. But now somebody's basically instilled this fear in you that says, boy, Nancy, if you ever make some changes, there's going to be a lot of, you know, this administrative kind of nightmare that you have to wade through. That's not successful for anybody.
Is there a way that I can easily find out who's available in my area? I don't want to have to drive a long ways to maybe look at something else.
Nancy, why don't you do this? Get out to investingsense.com. So investingsense, SENSE.com. You'll see a box. You can type in your zip code. You will see a list of all the people who are close to you who can help you with this. So I would do that, and then we can get you some good help here. Would that be okay?
Yes, that'd be fine. Thank you.
All right. Oh, you bet, Nancy. Thanks for calling. You hold on here.
I will.
Andy, it is great to hear that Nancy's going to be getting help. And with the Department of Labor fiduciary rule taking a big step forward yesterday, millions of people getting help. But and it brings to mind an article you sent me earlier this week about how there's a new area that needs some attention. And it's entitled, the article was, Timeshare Fraud is the New Securities Fraud. And in reading that article, things are getting pretty aggressive.
Pretty aggressive. They have this one thing that they call the hostage technique during timeshare presentations. So they lock you in a room for up to 6 hours until you sign paperwork. They don't let you have bathroom breaks. If you absolutely have to go, you got to go with an escort.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And the elderly are forced to ask their kids for money to pay for these timeshares. So, you know, is it legal? Maybe. I don't know. But this is an unregulated industry. And I'm not always in favor of blindly adding more regulation to any situation that's broken, but come on. I mean, there's 120-plus open timeshare fraud criminal investigations. So it's legal to offer a gift card, but it's not legal to hold people hostage. I mean, if normal companies operated like this, they'd be shut down.
So let me put you on the spot. Let me ask you, for folks listening today who are considering a timeshare or have bought a timeshare, what is your timeshare pitch?
This is like the anti-pitch. Look, there's no value in a timeshare. You're not owning real estate. This isn't an investment. This is a contract. Timeshares are perpetual obligations. Your heirs are going to inherit this. They're hard to unload. I mean, there's an entire cottage industry that was created because people needed to sell their timeshare interests, and they found it was next to impossible to do that on their own.
Well, part of the article that you sent me talked about how difficult it is to sell your timeshare once you have it.
Yeah, so the FTC has issued a warning on it. Go to investingsense.com. We've posted an overview of how the timeshare resale scam operates. Look, the timeshare model is broken. It's a broken model from the past. The industry is still very profitable. It's still strong, but it's because consumers are spending money on vacations. But in the Airbnb age, there are a lot of cheaper and a lot more no commitment options out there than locking yourself into these lifelong contracts.
So coming to a close in this week's show, a reminder once again, we have loaded investingsense.com with great information for you. You'll find the chart about the current cryptocurrency bull market, and seeing that chart is very powerful. You'll hear our conversation again with the founder of ESIMoney.com, and you'll also find his 10 things he didn't expect in early retirement. Plus, You'll find the infographic that we've posted there from the FTC about the high-pressure sales tactics and the scams that are rampant in the timeshare industry. It's all there at InvestingSense.com. Just click on the Recent Shows button. We'd love to have you join us here next weekend on Investing Sense. We'll be back to help you reach your retirement and your investing goals. For Andy Smith, I'm Bob Richards. We look forward to having you join us here next weekend on Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines. Have a great weekend.
Investing Sense is brought to you by Financial Engines and is sponsored by its advisor centers throughout the United States, including your local advisor center. The Financial Engines advisor centers provide investment advisory services to their clients using research and analysis performed by its research team. Investment advice provided to each advisor center serves the needs of each individual client and may or may not include funds mentioned in today's broadcast. Listeners should not consider today's discussion as a recommendation of any fund or investment product and should carefully evaluate any investment before investing. The advisor centers do not provide tax or legal advice. Consult a tax professional or lawyer for help with tax and legal matters. Individuals who invest with their local Financial Engines Advisor Center will incur management fees but not loads, in addition to the management fees and other expenses charged by the fund companies. We have discussed no-load mutual funds and exchange-traded funds during this broadcast. The research team's recommendations may include load-waived funds that are only available through certain trading platforms. Mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, like other investments, have a risk of loss. Term insurance products, as referenced on the show, are offered through TMFS Insurance Agency, LLC, an affiliate of Financial Engines in states where licensed. TMFS Insurance Agency, LLC, is under common ownership with Financial Engines. Please visit FinancialEngines.com for additional information.